Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
We're going to start a new series today, and that series is called For Argument's Sake. You know, today, more than any other time in history, information can be shared quicker than ever. Information can be responded to faster than ever. With the growth of the internet and social media and 24-hour news and news television stations, I mean, information can be spread very, very quickly. But we also have a chance to respond and to give comments and to give our own reaction to that information very, very quickly. And the University of California actually did a study on this. And they did a study on how much information our minds and our eyes and our ears are actually taking in today compared to other times in history. And they found that the amount of information the average person takes in every day, it is equivalent to 174 newspapers a day. You guys are taking in as much information that would be in 174 newspapers a day. They say that on average, every person receives about 105,000 words of information. Then they say if you would take all of the images that we take in, if you would add up all the videos and the things that we watch, it would add up to a daily amount on average, this is just on average, of 34 gigabytes of information a day. Think about how much storage is in your computer, how much is in your phone. You on average take up enough that would fill 34 gigabytes of information. Isn't that insane? They say it is six times more. We take in six times more new information than we did in the 1980s. They say that 100 years ago, people 100 years ago, the amount of information they received in a lifetime is what we receive in a day. Think about how much information that is. Now, let me tell you the most scary part of this entire statistic and study. This study was done in 2011. And it's 2019. So think about how much that has even grown. How much information we are taking in today. We take in more information than ever before. And it's a scary amount of information, which means that there's a growing amount of information that's great, that's brand new information we've never thought of, but it also means there's a lot of wrong information coming out. Because information is coming out and coming in so quickly, it's constantly changing. And so some of that information is misinformation. And then along with all of that information is information that we just didn't need to know. I mean, it was useless information, but it was still given to us, and it was still something we had to filter through. Some of our information comes from studies and research teams and scientists with degrees and university and a team of scientists sat down and figured this out. Sometimes our information just comes from a mom with a blog who raised her kids so perfectly that she just had to share what you need to do with the world because she believed so much in what she did. Some of our information comes from journalists with degrees, from media companies with no agenda at all. And then other times our information comes from Taylor Swift on Twitter. I mean, it's a wide spectrum of where our information comes from and who we're getting it from. But man, when we get it, we receive it, and we throw it through our filters, and we begin to think about it. And what I've seen over time is what we've all witnessed is with the growing amount of information we get comes a growing amount of arguments we have. Would you agree with me? I mean, as the information era continues to grow, as we receive even more information, and as we're allowed to give our input so easily, we have all seen a growing amount of arguments occur as we take in this new information. I experienced this firsthand at Christmas. So at Christmas, I got to spend time with my sister and her husband and my parents, we were all under one roof for Christmas, which hadn't happened in quite a long time. And my sister, their new parents, they just had, I'm an uncle for the first time. I have a little niece now named Brylin. She's just a few weeks old at that time. And so we got together and we're all under the same roof. And here's what we had here, okay? We had my sister and my brother-in-law, Michael and Brianna. New parents, right? And you guys all remember that stage when you were new parents and you've got this newborn and you've never done this before. You're scared. You're petrified. And you also believe everything your doctor tells you, right? Every doctor, every specialist that you have a meeting with, you believe what they tell you. It's just natural. Then you had my wife and I. My wife and I, we've had two kids. We've got two toddlers now. And what we have developed over time, many of you have this as well, we have developed what's called a parental instinct. And your parental instinct, it's like a spider sense, right? And you trust that parental instinct more than you do any book, more than you do any blog, even sometimes more than you do your own doctor. You believe in your parental instinct, and you find yourself as a parent going, they don't know what they're talking about. I trust my parental instinct. You have to, because if you were to deny your parental instinct, it would be admitting that you screwed up the first child and you did everything wrong. And so you trust that parental instinct. And then you had my parents, the grandparents, Brian and Luann. And let's just admit something. They grew up in a generation, they're in their 50s, but they grew up in a generation where they were told the exact opposite of what we're told today. I mean, they were told that belly is best when putting the child to sleep. Back is best now. They were told that bumper pads on cribs were okay. They were told that cough syrup was okay. My mom, when she raised me, she went by the belief that Vicks vapor rub on your feet covered by a sock cures the common cold. I mean, it's just a completely different amount of information that was shared with her, that was shared with us. So here we are, and we have these three different generations of parents. And so Brylin ate dinner. She drank her milk from her bottle, and then I was holding her, and so I'm holding her right here, and that kid starts to gnaw on my bicep. She turns her head in, and she starts to gnaw on my bicep. Now, again, my spidey sense begins to tingle. My parental instinct goes off. I know exactly what's wrong. There's one of two things happening. Either this kid is still hungry, or she wants a pacifier. Either way, she wants to suck on something, and my bicep is the biggest peak that she can grab. And so she begins to gnaw on my arm, and I look at my sister, and I go, hey, this kid's still hungry. And my sister looks at me, and she goes, that's impossible. Really, impossible. Yes, that's impossible. She just had 3 ounces. There's no way that that child is hungry. Really, there's no way. Look, we all just had dinner. We took in a good amount of calories, an adequate amount of calories, yet we're still all talking about having pie in the next hour, okay? I think it's normal for a baby to eat and not be satisfied and actually still want more. Maybe the child's giggered. I don't know, but I'm telling you, this kid wants something in her mouth. And I said, well, let's try a pacifier. Where's the pacifier? She goes, oh, we don't believe in pacifiers. I said, honey, I know this child's only 2 weeks old, but you better start believing in pacifiers. What do you mean you don't believe in pacifiers? She goes, yeah. She goes, we talked to a lactation expert, and they said, don't give him pacifier, nipple confusion. It's a big deal. And I'm like, you're not even breastfeeding. How can there be nipple confusion when there's no nipples in the child's life? This doesn't make sense. Again, I'm on Facebook Live. You've got to remind yourself this. Shoot. But how in the world can there be confusion? This child needs a pacifier. She's not on my arm. She needs a pacifier. We're not doing pacifiers. My mom goes, I'll get the Vicks vapor rub. No. So I leave. It's Christmas Eve night. It's Christmas Eve night. And this is my moment. I'm new uncle. I'm feeling a lot of pride. And I'm like, all right, here we go. So I get in the car and I go to Walgreens, Christmas Eve night. You can always count on Walgreens. They're always open. So I go to Walgreens. I get a little tool. And I would like to introduce you to Brylin's favorite Christmas present that she got from Uncle Mike. Go ahead and show that video. There she is. Look at how peaceful she is. She's so happy. Look at her. She's just sucking away at that thing. And so this was the video my sister sent me saying, I'm not cranky anymore. Thank you. Yeah, my sister just said, I'm not cranky anymore. Thank you, Uncle Mike. Exactly, right? See, it worked out. Now, here's the thing. Who knew that there were so many different beliefs on pacifier use? I had no clue. But, that was just over a pacifier. I mean, we debated, we argued, everybody shared what they thought was right, and it was over a pacifier. I mean, if we're arguing just over information overload on pacifiers, we all know that we're arguing about a lot about deeper things, things that matter a whole lot more than just pacifier. I mean, today, there's new information and so many different beliefs, so many different sides to take when it comes to issues such as gender, sexual identity, marriage, gun control, healthcare, immigration, masculinity, women and relationships with men, sexual assault. There are so many different things that we tend to argue about, that we begin to debate about. And as we've all seen over time, as new information has come out, we've begun to share this information, and we've begun to debate, and we've begun to talk, and we've begun to share. And what we've seen over time is that we've kind of changed. I've even seen a shift in my own lifetime. I mean, we've gone from agree to disagree. Remember when we used to say that? Well, let's agree to disagree. We've gone from agree to disagree to I'm right and you're wrong. We have. Well, we've changed. We've gone from, that's an interesting observation that you have. That's an interesting thought. I've never thought of it that way, and that's an interesting way to look at it, to no, you're stupid for thinking that. I mean, we've shifted. And we've gone to being cordial, we've gone from being respectful, we've gone from having healthy conversations to name-calling, to prejudice, to anger, to hate. And I think we can all agree that it hasn't been a good thing. I mean, in our day and age, all of this information that we're taking in, it's caused conflict with friends and coworkers and family members. It's made our country and our government more divided than ever before. It's caused generations to mock one another, where people say, oh, you're that millennial generation, you're just young and you're this, or, oh, you're that older generation, you're just old school and you're this and you're that. It's caused us to be defensive, incredulous, and angry. It's caused us to choose sides and feel like we constantly have to defend that side. Do you believe that this kind of behavior is healthy? I mean, don't you believe that there needs to be a change in our world? That the information overload that we have had, the amount of information that we take in, it has caused an epidemic in our culture. It's a good thing that we can now share so much with the world, but with it, our response has not been respectful. Our response has not been healthy. Now, let me talk to the Christians in the room. For those of us who are Christians and who believe in what Jesus said when he said that the greatest, the most important command, the thing above all things, is to love God by loving your neighbor, wouldn't you say that our culture's response, and Christians are just as guilty, that our response to new information and the way that we have fought back and defended things that don't need defending, that we have not been the most loving neighbor in the world? That something needs to change, not just with the world, but especially needs to change with Christians who are commanded to, no matter what, love their neighbor as theirself. And not only love their neighbor, but Jesus even said that neighbor also includes your enemy. To love people who think differently than you. To love people who have different opinions than you. Who love people who have different beliefs than you. Something has to change. And that's what we're going to talk about over the next four weeks. We're going to talk about what our response should be to the growing amount of information. What is it that we need to do? What stance do we need to take? And even though all of this information, it can be so much unsettling, right? It can be scary to take in. There's a posture that I believe that we need to take. A starting place for us that all of us need to adopt and make real in our lives. It's a stance we need to take. It's an attitude that we need to take, that if we as Christians are going to love our neighbor as ourselves, if we're going to be able to handle this information overload and respond the right way, there is a position that we need to take. And for those of us who aren't Christians, who don't even believe in God, This is just the healthy way of dealing with these conversations and with this information overload. But let me just warn you, this is gonna be very uncomfortable for you, okay? This position, this attitude that you need to take, it is not going to be easy. It's actually, for some of you, it's going to be very, very hard. It's going to take a very mature person to do this. I mean, if you're able to do this, you are definitely a person who is confident in who they are and in your own identity, and you are able to be that mature person, because this is going to be very, very hard to do. But let me explain. So when we receive information, the way that we process information, I believe there are three filters we run that information through. When we hear something new, when we read an article, when our friend says something or comments on something a certain way, when we watch a news interview, we run that information through three filters. And these are the three filters: our upbringing, our experience, and our beliefs. Now, we're going to talk about these more in depth later on in our series, but just think for a minute. Wouldn't you agree that when we hear information, we run it through what our mommy and daddy told us, right? How we were raised, to determine if it's right or wrong. We run it through our experiences that we've had and determine whether it's right or wrong. We run it through our personal beliefs and determine whether it's right or wrong. Well, there's a new filter that you need to put at the very top. Before you even run it through any of these things, there's a filter that you need to add. And this filter is going to save you a lot of time, a lot of emotional energy. It's going to be a filter that's going to help you actually respond the most loving, Christ-like, respectful way that you could possibly respond. And it starts with this. Here we go. It's this statement right here. I don't know everything about anything. I don't know everything about anything. Now, we're going to say it out loud together. Are you ready? You ready? We're going to say this together. Ready? I don't know everything about anything. Now, I want you to turn to the person next to you. Turn to the person you came to church with. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's your child. Whatever it is. Turn to them. Kind of look at them. Take them by the hands right now, okay? I'm helping your relationship. Go ahead. Seriously. You're looking at me. I'm waiting for you, all right? Turn to the person you came with and say, honey, sugar bear, sweetheart, you guys are doing it. This is very good. Okay, ready? Ready? Look at them in the eye. I don't know. Very good job. Man, I just helped you so much. You're going to have such a better lunch today now. This is great. Think about it, though. I don't know everything about anything. I don't know everything about anything. Here's what that says. Here's what that posture means, that attitude of saying, I don't know everything about anything. What that is that is an attitude. That is a posture. That is a position where I am admitting to myself and anyone I come into contact with that I don't know it all. I am not perfect. I don't have all of the answers. I don't know everything about anything. I am not an expert. And here's the thing I'm willing to admit. Now, this is the big pill to swallow. This is why it takes a really mature person to take this posture and to have this attitude. Do you know what this states? Do you know what this means? I don't know everything about anything. Here's what I'm willing to admit. I might be wrong. There is a possibility that I got it wrong. There is a possibility that my parents taught me wrong. There is a possibility that my experiences were jaded or one in a million or inaccurate, or that one experience doesn't sum up an entire culture, an entire gender, an entire race, an entire country. I may be wrong. I don't know everything about anything. And my upbringing may have been a little jaded. My experiences may be a little bit jaded, and my beliefs may be inaccurate. And so as I have this conversation, as I take this information in, I am listening to you, and I am able to admit to myself and to you that I don't know everything about anything. Now, the person who takes this posture, the person who has this attitude, do you know what this person does differently? This person doesn't feel like they have a side that they need to defend. This person isn't quick to comment. This person doesn't immediately shut people off. This person doesn't debate, and this person doesn't argue. This person has the humility to be able to say, tell me more. This person is a person who's willing to say, I'm going to listen to you. This is a person who's willing to say, you know what? That's an interesting observation that you've just made. I've never thought about it that way. Let's continue to have this conversation. It's this posture and it's this attitude that keeps me from running all of my other filters of my upbringing and my experience and my beliefs. And right at the top, from the get-go, it keeps me from putting up a wall between me and that other person. Being able to say, I don't know everything about anything. Now, here's what some of you are already thinking. What has already gone through your head. What you said, you didn't say it out loud. You said it in your mind, and I heard you because I'm psychic. And what you just said as I'm sharing this information with you is you said, I don't know everything about anything, but I know more than you, preacher boy. That's what you just said. I heard it. I heard it in your head. You said, I don't know everything about anything. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying at all. I'm just saying I know more than you. That's all I'm saying, okay? That's all that I'm saying. And we do. We do that, don't we? No, I'm not saying I'm perfect. You know, no one's that, you know, much of a jerk to say, I'm not saying I know everything. I'm just saying I know more than you. I'm just saying that I'm older than you, that I'm wiser than you. I'm just saying I've experienced more than you. I'm just saying I've had two kids and you haven't. So, I mean, I'm just saying I know more than you do. Now, what is that inside of you? What is that? What is that little thing inside of you that makes you respond that way? Where you're willing to say, I don't know everything about anything, but what is that but? What is that but? What is that thing that makes you want to respond? What is that thing that makes you have to comment on that Facebook article? What is it that makes you fire back? What is it that makes you have to share your opinion? You know what it is? I figured it out. I'm going to share with you what it is right now. That little thing inside of you that wants to fight back, that thing is this. That thing is pride. It's your pride. It is the pride inside of you that keeps you from potentially learning something you need to know. It is that pride inside of you that keeps you from growing. It is that pride inside of you that makes you filter everything through your upbringing, your experience, and your beliefs. It is your pride that does not want to admit that there is a possibility, there is a chance that your Gam-Gam got it wrong, and then she taught your parents wrong, and then your parents possibly taught it to you wrong. It is your pride inside of you that is not willing to admit that possibly there should have been a different teaching and a different belief that was given to you when you were young, that was instilled, that there is a chance that your family got it, did it, taught it wrong. There is that pride inside of you that keeps you from thinking that your experience is possibly jaded, that keeps you from thinking that your experiences were all right. It is that pride that keeps you from thinking that your beliefs are the right beliefs. And it is your pride that keeps you, that continues to make you seek other people who only believe what you believe, who only talk how you talk. And it is that pride that makes you change friends. It is that pride that makes you change jobs. It is that pride inside of you that sometimes even makes you change churches because you are not able to be around people who might possibly disagree with you. And you are so shut off to new information and new beliefs that it causes you to escape. It causes you to run because you can't admit to yourself that you don't know everything about anything. Now, you don't believe me? The wisest man who ever lived on the face of the planet wrote something incredible that goes right along with this. The wisest person who ever lived, King Solomon, a man who is considered the wisest man who ever lived, who gave us literature full, chocked full of wisdom, who was given wisdom by God. He asked God for wisdom, and God gave him the wisdom he needed to lead the largest kingdom in history. King Solomon, he said this. In Proverbs 11:2, he says this. He says, when pride comes, then comes, what's that word? Let's say it again. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, right? See, here's the thing about pride. Pride never leads us down a positive path. With pride comes disgrace. Pride stops growth. Pride stops change. Pride refuses help. Pride builds a wall around you and doesn't allow anyone else to come in. But here's the thing about that word disgrace. Disgrace has to do with other people. So pride not only hurts you, but here's the thing. Pride affects your relationships with other people. Pride leads to disgrace. That means pride hurts your reputation. Pride keeps you from being able to have conversations with people. Pride makes people not respect you as much. Pride sends a signal to people that you are not willing to listen, that you are not open-minded, that you are not able to have a loving, intellectual conversation about something that may be different than what you've heard, what you were taught, or what you currently believe. Pride keeps us from being able to love our neighbor. Pride can hurt our relationships with our parents, and it keeps us from taking correction and advice from them. Pride can hurt our relationship with our kids or our teenagers. Pride is what hurts our relationships with our siblings, our aunts, our uncles, our coworkers. Pride leads to nothing good. Pride only leads us to disgrace. And it destroys our ability to lead, it destroys our ability to relate, and it destroys our ability to have relationship with others. That part of you that wants to debate, that wants to argue, that is resistant to new information, it destroys so many possibilities in your life. And it keeps you where you are and even makes you take steps back in your relationships. Pride doesn't belong in a marriage. Pride doesn't belong in a business relationship. Pride definitely doesn't belong in a church. Pride is a secret killer. But there is an antidote. And King Solomon talked about that right after he said that pride leads to disgrace. Then he says this. But with, what's that word? Let's say it again. But with comes what? Let's say this word. Wisdom, right? When pride comes, comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. See, a humble person is a person who is willing to take the stance. I don't know everything about anything. I'm willing to admit that I don't have all the answers. I'm willing to admit that I could have got it wrong. I'm willing to admit that my experiences may have been jaded. And I'm willing to admit that my beliefs may need to change. And I'm going to take the position of humility, because when I am humble, I am able to be wise. And with wisdom, I am able to love. See, pride automatically brings disgrace. Pride automatically destroys. But when I take the position in my heart, the attitude of humility, I am able to be wise. And the wise person is not seeking to be right. The wise person is seeking for what is right. A wise person doesn't have a political party or a team or an agenda to defend. The wise person is looking what is best for people, because a wise person loves people. Period. The wise person is always up for conversation. The wise person is always taking in new information. The wise person is always willing to listen, because they are humble and because they are willing to learn. They are always willing to say, tell me more. Let's have coffee. Let's have a conversation. Let's continue to think about it. Let's see what this brings us. The humble person is always seeking truth. And it's that wise person who's able to actually love. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. Here's the thing. Here's the bottom line. If you don't take anything else away, here's what you need to know. To know anything about everything, you've got to know that you don't know everything about anything. Now let me read that again. To know anything about everything, you've got to know that you don't know everything about anything. You've got to take that posture. You've got to take that position and have that attitude to humble yourself enough to be able to listen, to take in new information, to have healthy conversations. Before you run it through any other filter, before you run it through what your parents taught you, before you run it through your experience, before you run it through your beliefs, you've got to take this position and be willing to listen. Now, if you're not a Christian this morning, don't you agree that this position is better than what we've been doing? Even if you're not a Christian this morning, would you not agree that this position and this attitude would be far healthier than the debating, incredulous, angry culture that we are currently living in? Don't you think that with this position, we could actually learn from each other, and we could grow, and we could evolve, and we could develop new ideas and new beliefs? That there is a possibility that the older generation could learn from the younger generation, and the younger generation could learn from the older generation, and that Democrats possibly have something to learn from Republicans, and Republicans probably have something to learn from the Democrats. That people of different cultures and different races and different genders actually have a contribution to give, and that if we would listen to one another, if we were just willing to admit that we don't know everything about anything, that there is a possibility that we could all grow together and make this world a better place. Now, that's for you who aren't Christians. Now, all the Christians in the world, listen up, okay? This is the last thing I'm going to say. You got to pay attention to this. When you think back on Jesus' ministry, Jesus' life that was very, very short, who was Jesus' biggest opponent? Who was the most opposition to what Jesus was trying to do? It wasn't Satan. That's your religious answer that you've been told. It wasn't Satan. You know who it was? It was the religious. It was the religious Jewish Pharisees who had an old covenant, old time way of doing things. A tradition of rules and legalism and agendas that they felt like were more important than anything else. And when Jesus came on the scene, he came to introduce something new. New information, a new way of doing things. He said to them, "You have heard it said this, but I am telling you something you have needed to hear for a long time. This is actually what God wants you to do. And you have heard it said this way, but let me tell you this, the most important thing, the thing above all things is this, is that you love God and you love your neighbor." And it was the religious Pharisees, the rule followers, who opposed Jesus most. It was the religious Jewish Pharisees who said, "There's no way that could be true. This is how we've always done things, and we're not going to change. And this rule is more important than anything else. And these are our traditions. And this is the way that we feel like we need to continue to do things. And you're not going to change our mind, and you're not going to change our opinion. And to even entertain that makes me sick, and it makes me angry." And it was these religious Jewish Pharisees who did not care about the opinions of women. It was the religious Jewish Pharisees who knocked down the new generation of Jews who were rising up. It was the Jewish Pharisees who knocked down every other culture like the Gentiles and anybody else who didn't do things their way. And it was those same people who tried to put Jesus to death. Now, we hear those stories. Many of you have heard that before. And we can all agree, the Pharisees were the villains of Jesus' time, right? We look back and we read that story and we go, "Those were some bad guys. I would never want to be like that. I'm not like those people." Yet today, the reputation of Christians is that we are stubborn, is that we are unwilling to change, that we have a political agenda that trumps people, that we are not willing to have healthy conversations, and that we are not willing to change. We are very, very, very close to being the religious Jewish Pharisees of our day and age. And if we're not careful, we will continue to turn people off to Christ and church because we are unwilling to receive new information. We are unwilling to have healthy conversations. We are unwilling to learn from one another because it is our pride that has set us in our ways. It is our pride that keeps us tethered to a tradition and an agenda that doesn't matter anymore. And if we are ever going to reach people for Christ, if we are ever going to be able to change people's minds about church, people are fine with Jesus. It's usually the church that they have a problem with. If we're ever going to change people's minds about that, we have to take the position that we don't know everything about anything and that we are humble enough to be wise, because wisdom is what allows us to love people, the way that God has called us to love people. When I was young and naive, I thought that the most Christian thing I could do was any chance I got to defend God and to defend my beliefs, to comment and to tell people how wrong they were and how right I was, and to try to get everybody to adopt the way of Michael Davis and to do the world the way Michael Davis did, to adopt the things that I were taught as a child from my parents, to adopt my experiences, to adopt my beliefs. And I thought that the most Christian thing I could do was convince people. But let me tell you something. If you've built a time machine, I would like to use it. Because if I had a time machine, I would go back in time and I would smack younger Michael over the head with something heavy. Not to blunt him, but just to smack him, to smarten him up. And I would tell younger Michael, God doesn't need you to defend him. The Bible doesn't need you to defend it. God needs you to love people. God doesn't need you to change people. God doesn't need you to change people's minds. And here's the thing, you never will. What God has called you to do is to love people. And that begins with humility. That begins with the position that I don't know everything about anything, and I am willing to listen, and I am willing to learn. And let me tell you, since I have taken that position, I have actually changed. I have grown. I have new beliefs, and I have new, better experiences because I am in line with what God is actually calling me to do, to love my neighbor as much as I love myself and I love him. Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning we come to you, and I thank you so much for the wisdom that you gave Solomon that could be given to us today. God, this morning, some of us in this room, we have to confess. We have to admit that we have been sinful and selfish at times. There have been times, God, where we have hurt our neighbor by defending an agenda, a side, an opinion, a belief, that we have been very first to run new information through our own filters and to fight back. And it's been made us angry. It's made us defensive. It's hurt our ability to have relationships with other people. And so God, this morning, as some of us recognize that, as the light bulb has gone off, God, this morning, we ask for your forgiveness. God, will you forgive us of those times where we have debated and we've argued for the sake of something that didn't need to be defended or argued for? God, this morning, would you help us to be loving people? Will you help us take a position of humility? Will you this morning change our minds about our minds? And will you this morning help us to take the posture and the attitude that we do not know everything about anything? And God, with that posture and that attitude, give us the ability to have conversations, to grow as individuals. Would you, God, help us this morning to be able to love our neighbor? And God, even if we still don't agree, God, would you help us to love people who still disagree with us and who believe differently than us, who vote differently than us, who have different opinions than us? God, would you help us this morning to love people no matter what? And would you help us to respond the right way, in a loving way? And will you help us to take this position to our workplaces, with our family, with our marriage? Would you not allow pride to usher in disgrace? Would you, God, help us to battle our pride, for our pride to be eliminated, for our pride to be taken away and diminished? And would you, God, replace it with the same humility that your son, Jesus Christ, had? Would we not oppose what Jesus is trying to do here on this earth by being prideful, by having an agenda? But will you, God, instead help us to humbly walk in your footsteps? God, that's our prayer this morning. And I pray that this morning, that as we leave here today, we would take this and we would live this out this week, that this would not just be new information that we take in and keep to ourselves, but that it would change our actions, it would change our mind, and it would change the way that we filter and process information, God. We love you this morning, and we pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, hey, I am so glad that you chose to be with us today, whether you're here or you watched us on Facebook Live. And I want to encourage you as you leave today to be generous and to be generous at our Dropbox in the back. I also want to let you know, too, if you serve in our worship ministry, we're going to have a meeting upstairs in the studio immediately following service. For the rest of you, I hope you have a great day. I hope you stay warm outside. You guys come back next week for part two of our series called For Argument's Sake. If you guys will stand, let's shake hands with somebody, and I hope you guys have a great day.
Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. We hope that you can make it to one of our Sunday morning experiences at 211 Boone Street at 10 a.m. Don't forget to check out our website, www.anchoredhope.church. You can also give online very easily and conveniently. We'd love to have your support on our mission to lead people to a growing relationship with Jesus.